Welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on the weekly, Twilight 2000 by Free League on Kickstarter, Green Ronin's Sword Chronicle, Thousand Suns RPG, and the Drive-Thru RPG Medals. What do those mean? The seller ranking?
I had a blank stare on my face like, what is this? Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
It's something I'd always wondered about, and I finally found a source for what that actually means.
Okay, I look forward to this. Yeah.
If you have a certain rank as a seller, what that means. So we had mentioned before, Twilight 2000 is getting remade. I didn't know who it was, found out it was Free League.
Yeah.
And now it's up on Kickstarter. So the classic RPG returns in a new retro-apocalyptic edition. So this is, of course, if you don't know Free League, the makers of Alien RPG and Forbidden Lands, they're working in partnership with Game Designers Workshop for this version. As far as everything I've read, they're going to be using the year... Zero engine.
I would expect so.
But that's, you know, pretty similar to, it's not too far from original mechanics. Okay. I mean, there's similarities. And I think people noticed that right away with Forbidden Lands. There were some similarities to that system that is live right now. And the interesting thing that they're doing is they're releasing, it's a box set. It's not a book. It's, you know, it's not a hardcover book or anything. It's going to be a box set similar to the, you know, previous sets that they've done.
Like the Alien Starter Set?
Yeah, Alien Starter Set and how they handled Forbidden Lands, where there's a map and there's cards and there's books. In this case, though, the books are not going to be hardcover volumes. They're going to be more of the booklets or pamphlets of the original game. And so they'll also give them opportunity to expand, you know, I think more inexpensively, different settings and things.
I wonder if they don't meet a bunch of stretch goals, if that means like the box will look pretty empty. With little pamphlets. Like, I doubt it.
You know, I think they've already kind of set out. I don't think there's not stuff in stretch goals. I think it's just enhancements. It's not going to be like quality enhancements and things. They may not be doing things. In the description of the set, they say the box set will include two beautifully... Oh, at the very least. Okay. So yeah, the box set at the very least will include two beautifully illustrated full color books, the player's manual, the referee's manual, each about 100 pages detailing the rules, setting, gear, and scenarios, and then several empty character sheets, a huge color map, of course, central Poland on one side and southern Sweden on the other. So there's the Free League influence. And so they'll add more content, including combat maps, tokens, cards. They usually how they do it for initiative. They'll do initiative at 1 through 10 initiative cards and custom dice. So kind of following what they usually do. But I guess those things will be unlocked. That is on Kickstarter until September 3rd. So I'm curious to see how well it does. And they're doing like a limited version, like a Kickstarter only version of a steel box.
Really?
Wow.
Okay. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. So that'll be fun. Artwork looks great as always with Free League.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in that game, I think it's going to have to be a little bit of an updated version. They of course want the original feel of the game, but it's going to have to be for a modern sensibility. I don't think they're not probably seeing this as like a recreation of that original experience. Oh, I think just because the Year Zero engine streamlines a lot of things. So I think there'll be less bullet counting and things with the way that they may handle certain mechanics in it. Because, you know, just like an Alien or Forbidden Lands, it's like, oh, my gun jammed, or oh, that means I'm out of ammo, but I have 500 rounds, but I guess I'm out of ammo.
Right, No, I really like the way they tracked ammo in Alien, which is the Year Zero engine game I'm most familiar with, where it's just like, oh, you rapid fire and you rolled a one on the stress die. That means you're out of ammo. You've emptied the clip.
Right.
And I think Forbidden Lands does something with like gear dice where they degrade.
Yes.
Which I could see them using that as well. And to me, that's like a much more appealing way to have resources matter without the game bogging down into combat bookkeeping.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm curious how much lighter the rules will be for this kind of more modern sensibility. Because I think the thing that people love about the original is how...
Bean counter it is.
Right. Yeah, you're just keeping track of everything. And that's really important because it's, you know, in the post-apocalypse, everything is limited. You know, the scarcity is...
Like, I will say, I understand the appeal of that kind of game. And that is kind of what originally turned me on to that Red Market zombie apocalypse game. Ended up being, like, way too crunchy for me. And... didn't really look much further. Yeah, in some styles of games, you want to track absolutely everything and all of your gear because having the right thing at the right time is important, and watching your resources dwindle and not knowing if you're going to get resupplies, not knowing if you're going to be able to resupply, is part of the tension of the game.
Right.
I just don't want to have to bust out or make an Excel sheet to play a role-playing game, which isn't to say, like, some people enjoy that, and that's totally fine.
Right.
Not what I want out of a game.
Yeah, so we'll see if they can strike a balance and where that kind of lands. I'm not sure if there's a like a quick start kind of play test of it, but but we'll see how that looks. And so we'll put a link for that Kickstarter until September 3rd. It's going in the description.
Probably find it within like 12 hours, I bet.
Yeah,
definitely within 24.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because there's already a lot of activity. They've got a Facebook group for it and everything, and there's already a lot of activity. And there was already an existing Facebook group of the hardcore fans of the original. Mm. So, yeah, I think they'll... Yeah, I'm curious to see what that group, what the original fans are going to... This isn't Twilight, yeah. So we'll see. Not my Twilight hashtag.
I get those two confused with another media property called Twilight. Yeah.
That's right. Not my Twilight 2000.
It would have to be that. Yeah. I am now thinking of that mashup. Twilight 2000.
Yes.
Just add some vampires to it.
It's Poland, so you just move a little further over to Eastern Europe and you're all set. You set it in Transylvania.
Transylvania, I don't know. Where do sparkly vampires come from? I thought it was like Portland, Oregon, but anyway.
Oh, right.
Moving on.
Sword Chronicle. So the Chronicle game system, which powered Green Ronin's Song of Ice and Fire tabletop RPG, but that system is no longer available from Green Ronin. I don't know if somebody else has the rights to it or if no one wants to play that setting or what. A Sword Chronicle setting neutral rule set is now released. So there's some changes, some simple things like how armor works and a few other things. But if you played that A Song of Ice and Fire RPG, it's going to be a very familiar system. In Sword Chronicle, you're not an adventurer. You've shaken the blood off your sword after plunging it into an unholy beast. But real monsters stalk the world's thrones. So I guess that's why they used it for Game of Thrones, is because, so it's more intrigue. So you belong to a noble house, and as fortunes rise and fall with your actions, you're a lord, a knight, a servant in the shadows, or perhaps a sorcerer sage bound to a dynasty's rulers. So kind of setting neutral, but they definitely want you to play the intrigue, not the dungeon crawling or monster slaying.
Well, I think we never got a chance to play the Song of Ice and Fire role-playing game. I think Lyle had a copy of the book, and I had like a copy of the digest book. Mm-hmm. Like I said, never got a chance to play it, but it looked really interesting in that intrigue seemed just as viable an option as physical combat in terms of how you would approach things.
Right.
And it looked like a game that, I mean, balance doesn't really matter until people start feeling like they don't get a chance to do anything in the game. It looked like it did a really good job of balancing those two things, since it was kind of, based on A Song of Ice and Fire, where intrigue is maybe more deadly than physical combat.
Right.
Unless they did major overhauls to the system, I would be very surprised if Sword Chronicles didn't also focus heavily on intrigue. It would have been a lot of work to strip that out and make things work.
No, I think so.
If you're just going to pull out the mechanics and file off serial numbers, then it's going to be an intrigue-heavy game.
Yeah, it says that there's just a few things that were tweaked, but it's mostly very recognizable from rules. Yeah, so specifically, they revised and reorganized intrigue rules to give socially oriented characters real power. There's also mass combat rules fit for sieges and conquests, so you can kind of play as armies, as whole forces. And then subtle, powerful magic for the Chronicle system. And then they are introducing a setting. So they're calling it, setting neutral, but they're giving you a setting if you don't want to apply it to something else called the Shattered Era. Of course, due to the pandemic, it's currently just released as a PDF. So there'll be a print on demand version of it coming, but for right now, they're just going to release it digitally, as everyone is kind of being forced to do at this time. If you had kind of positive feelings about that system applied to Game of Thrones, then it might be worth seeing what else it does. And that seemed to be one of the things that the Dune RPG, no spoilers or no NDA, but that seemed to be something that is necessary. So this system, although it's meant to be playing medieval fantasy, may have worked well with a setting like Dune.
I'm trying to collect my thoughts because like medieval fantasy, I'm like, Dune wasn't really hard sci-fi, was it? It was kind of like, whatever, and we could quibble over like details and stuff. Not really, I don't want to. But it kind of seemed more like sci-fantasy to me, especially when you start getting to the other books and like the God Emperor of Doom starts transforming into a worm or whatever. But so I think, never thought about it before, but you could totally use A Song of Ice and Fire or this new Sword Chronicles to play a fairly satisfying Dune game, I think, especially with the focus on houses.
Oh, right.
And where, hey, how about don't be from separate houses, just be from one so the game makes sense, kind of thing.
Yes. So getting back to those recommendations, those deal of the day recommendations from Drive-Thru RPG, I finally found something that wasn't a 5e compatible setting that actually looked interesting. Been out for a while. I think maybe since 2008. It was revised in 2011, and I'm not sure if it was a Kickstarter or not, but they've kind of redesigned it and revised the rules. Thousand Suns.
I think I've heard of this.
Okay.
Probably from Chris.
So similar to Stars Without Number, which is more of like an OSR, like Traveler. Like if you like the Traveler setting, I think Stars Without Number is the OSR version of that.
Isn't it kind of like a space hex crawl where you're not necessarily smugglers, but kind of, I think people refer to it as like a debt runner game where you're trying to do jobs to pay off stuff on your ship. So you can go do more jobs.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so Thousand Suns is a more epic scale. Designed by James Malaszewski at Grognardia. He had a blog for a long time, I'm talking about his design sensibilities and an old school role play. The inspiration for Thousand Suns is Imperial science fiction of the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Okay.
So meaning like Paul Anderson, Isaac Asimov, Bertram Chandler, Gordon Dixon. So basically empire versus empire. Mm-hmm. So we've traveled to the stars and encountered other civilizations, and they're just as advanced as us, and we're either negotiating or attacking each other.
Right. And if it's anything like Asimov, there's no women.
Right. 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 System that powers this looked very interesting. It's called the 12 degree system. Okay. So you're rolling 2d12s. Mm.
The neglected die.
The neglected die, right. And the degree of your success in certain situations like damage works as a multiplier.
Okay.
So how far you succeed over a target number gives you a number that you're multiplying something by. Right. So your success makes you more successful.
What was that? A bigger success makes you more successful. Yes. Okay. I like this idea.
The game seemed very appealing. They do say, it's similar to Traveler, much less complicated, much more stripped down, but you can play that kind of scale. It's also very open to making the world what you want it to be. Right. If you don't want it to have the influence of the 50s or 60s, you want it more updated sensibility, it's capable of doing that. There's nothing really in the rules. And there is a setting that you can use. They say it's very open to however you'd want to play. Okay. So they give you suggestions about what aliens and empires you could be encountering. But so I can imagine you could probably play anything from The Expanse to even something like Firefly or something. This because they give you another in the classes of the characters, you see a lot of that flavor. Okay. If you want something more modern.
Is there magic-y stuff in it? Like, could you do Star Wars?
You can play. There is psychic powers. There's espers. So there are people with psionic abilities. So if you kind of tweak that a little bit, I think you could run that as far as, bending men's minds to your will.
Yeah, now I'm thinking like the mule from Foundation. who could affect people's emotional states. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think they kind of make that an optional thing, too. Okay. If you think that's going to kind of ruin your world, or it's going to make it a little too magic-y or too whatever.
Too espery.
Espery. Yeah. Yeah, so I wanted to recommend it because it looked very appealing. And since it's been revised, it doesn't seem like it's had a lot of action. There's been some books, not by the original author, but some supporting books for ships and a little mini setting campaign to play to get it so you can get right into the game. So there's a few volumes that have been produced, nothing on the scale of like Traveler was. Right. There's a few volumes and you can get those print on demand or PDF. And so it was one of the deals of the day and looked really appealing. And it's been a while since anything has even slightly caught my eye.
Slightly appealed to you?
Yeah, right. It's been a lot of same old. So leading into that. So when they recommend those games and you go to the page, you see a little metal.
Silver, platinum.
Right. Yes.
Is there gold? Maybe?
Yes. Yes, there's a lot.
Electrum.
Not that many. But they do rank the sellers. So basically they're giving you, without posting numbers on the page, they're telling you about how many copies that of this game have been sold on their platform.
And I think I've seen a discussion about this before where it's numbers of copies sold, not sort of total dollar amount sold. Mm. And I think maybe jumping ahead, one of the complaints I've seen about that metal system was you could have like a 50 cent title.
Right.
And as long as it sells the correct number, it becomes a platinum seller.
Right.
Whereas something that's like 10, 15, 20 bucks, even if it sells as much, because you're looking at total sales in terms of number of units, you're not going to get the same seller metal.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And there is even pay what you want on
there is. I don't know if
they would rank those.
I don't know if it ranks. Yeah.
Because that would be interesting. Super double whatever. So I'll just run through the medals so you have some idea like what we're talking about as far as numbers. And I was surprised how low the numbers were, but it's tabletop RPG. So
does this apply to DM's Guild? Because from what I hear, there's a lot more sales on DM's Guild.
I haven't looked. Yeah, I haven't really looked specifically at DM's Guild, so I'm not sure if they rank the sellers the same way or rank the items the same way.
Yeah, it would be items, not sellers. Yeah,
right.
Anyway, numbers.
Numbers. So, of course, copper is your first metal, the first metal you can earn, and that's for selling 51 units. So you go over 50 and you're copper. So I was surprised. That's a pretty low threshold. So we're already there. But I guess that makes sense. I mean, they know their customer. You know, they know how many people.
I'm gonna run through in my head where hunger and thirst would rank on this metal system if each had one.
Okay, good. So silver is 101, mm-hmm. so over 100. Electrum, 251. Gold, 501. Mm-hmm. Platinum, 1001. Mithril, 2501. Adamantine, yeah. I was going to say adamantium. Adamantine, 5001.
I've never seen a Mithril or an Adamantine title on DriveThruRPG. Doesn't mean they don't exist. Mm-hmm. Just means I've never encountered one.
I've seen a couple.
Oh,
really?
With
their deals of the day, I think they go a lot by that ranking. So something that has that sales ranking but hasn't had sales in a while, maybe that's how they become deals of the day because it does seem like you're kind of time traveling with some of their recommendations. It's not things that just came off of Kickstarter or whatever. It's like, oh, a Kickstarter from 2011. Like, oh, okay. So yeah. And so maybe they know
it's fulfilled.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. So it got, but is it?
Yeah, possibly not.
The backers are still waiting for their coffees and DriveThruRPG.
I'm sure there's some accounts, or I'm sure there's some campaigns like that. Yeah.
Right. So where would you?
I've got gold on both.
Oh, nice.
Gold on both hunger and thirst. If it's what, like 751, something like that. Mm-hmm. Haven't cracked 1,000 on either of them, but I've had like over 700 downloads on both of them, I think.
Nice.
Oh, that's doesn't translate to sales.
Right.
Because for a while they were pay what you want. Mm-hmm. And I also have community copies up.
Ah, right. That's great though. That's that you've moved a lot of units.
Apart from spending a lot of money on color copies to make print and play cards for Tachyon Squadron game tonight,
right.
Which I've messed up a couple copies and at 50 yen a pop, that's not cheap.
Yeah, right.
I'm also very glad I have one of those die cut kind of like rounding edger things because I'm rounding the edges of those print and play cards to make them look extra nice.
Okay.
So that's going tonight. I'm going to try out those cards for the character creation because I think, like I said before, for that Masters of Umdar game we were running, when people kind of aren't familiar with the game system, it's an extra burden on the players to have them write down a lot of stuff that until you have played is or might as well be kind of gibberish.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to try and shortcut that by saying, here's a bunch of cards. Mm. Pick what you think is going to look cool to build your characters. The information's already on the card, so you don't have to write anything down.
Oh, that's cool.
So I'm hoping that'll go faster.
Nice. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. That should be fun.
I'm looking forward to, but also somewhat apprehensive to hear what call signs you give your pilots, given the fact that when I said it's Top Gun in space, fully 2/3 of the players said, so gay space volleyball then? Independently of each other, I'll add.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, maybe just most of the decision making is resolved with like a virtual simulation of beach volleyball.
Oh, maybe.
I think
people are going to be real disappointed when the session starts with you in your fighter pilot or in your fighters.
Right.
Going somewhere. Oh, flashback to space volleyball. Yep. Okay.
So, yeah, we'll report back on how that went next week.
Yeah. I'm actually looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And next Sunday, I'm actually not running for the Jig game for once. I'm playing in Lucian Khan's Visigoths versus Maul Goths game, which the writing for that is absolutely hilarious to the point where I ordered a physical copy, paid more than the book to get it shipped to Japan,
right.
Then saw there was a special edition, and then ordered a second one, which is being shipped to my house.
Nice. So,
it's weird. It kind of, I guess, intersects with my somewhat recent love of Vaporwave because it's specifically 1996 LA malls. So imagine what the style of the architecture would be.
Right.
The book is kind of laid out in that style, which I'm like, this is amazing. Yeah, I love this.
Nice.
So I was willing to eat that shipping cost. Don't know if my book's going to arrive before the game, but I've got PDF copies. So
cool.
I'm very much looking forward to that. And we'll report back to the shenanigans that happen after the game.
Wow. I was a visitor to LA malls in the 90s. Yeah. I wish you luck.
So when I get the book and we play it for this group, that's going to be a real fun game. Because, yeah, you were a visitor in the mall, LA malls in the 90s. Alan worked in like, I think he said he worked in like a Hot Topic back in like the 90s. I'm like, that's where I was kind of hanging out in the 90s. So, yeah, this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
I think I might be the oldest player at the Jig game.
Whoa.
Okay, there's maybe one other. But I imagine the other people to be like, did this happen in the 90s? And I'm just going to be doing like, oh, my God.
So a mall, what are we doing? You mean like online or what are we? You have to walk from one end to the other? Oh.
What's an anchor store?
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, those are going extinct as we speak, I think. Yeah.
There will be have you no seen the post on social media that people are, or I guess malls are setting up mannequins like on the escalators and stuff to make it look like there's traffic?
Nice. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, they're all going to become Amazon shipping centers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I've heard is they're just going to be all bought out because of their ideal locations.
So back to games.
Yes.
How about you? What have you been working on?
The part four of the Mutant Chronicles, the complete Mutant Chronicles. So this is the Brotherhood. So yeah, it's really good. I think there's a lot of details that in the early part of that, and there's a lot of suggestions of strange forces at work that kind of come up in the origin of the Brotherhood. So it's fun, and it'll be great once all the factions are kind of spelled out. I think it'll be really fun then to do the last part of this history. But yeah, so that's close. Mutant Chronicles. So nothing gaming wise.
Gaming adjacent.
The Swords and Sorcery is taking a little bit of a break.
Oh, right.
So yeah, we might something else. So there was even talk of West End Games Star Wars D6 as a kind of a little palate cleanser.
Which was actually a decent system. I think that's one of the systems I cut my teeth on GMing, but at least for a couple sessions. And I liked the D6 die pool mechanic.
But yeah, no big plans immediately. And things have been online for the past few weeks, so yeah.
Which makes it kind of weird.
Yes. But. Although it would be fun if we're in our fighters, you know. We could do great backgrounds on Zoom of cockpits.
Yeah, you could, yeah. Yeah, then just like rattle your chair a little bit when that incoming fire hits. Yeah, yeah.
So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always. Tyvemynd, Hyvemynd. And soon, I think, as if I don't have enough abandoned Twitter accounts, I'm going to start one that is just synthwave and adjacent music recommendations.
Oh, nice.
How about you?
I do a single panel gag cartoon that I live stream the creation of every week. So both on Twitch and YouTube, you can find me at Abuse Cartoons. The website is abusecartoons.com. The archive of all those cartoons for many, many years is gocomics.com/domesticabuse. If you'd like to get in touch with Idle Red Hands, idleredhands.com is the website. Follow us on Twitter at Idle Red Hands. We have both a Twitch and a YouTube channel. And if you'd like to get involved and support the podcast, please visit patreon.com/idleredhands. So in honor of our session tonight, I came across a great story about Dave Arneson. For those of you that don't know, Dave Arneson was worked with Gary Gygax for the creation of original Dungeons & Dragons. And so later his name came off of it, and so people mostly recognize Gary Gygax as the creator. But Dave Arneson played a big part, and especially his Blackmoor campaign. So if you are interested in the origins of tabletop fantasy roleplay, I would highly recommend the Secrets of Blackmoor documentary, which you can find on Vimeo and I believe Amazon as well. So look for that if you want to get a great history of early Dungeons & Dragons with the Blackmoor group. But here's the story of Dave Arneson as impartial DM. To say that Dave was completely impartial with regards to the game was not to say that Dave was completely impartial with regards to the players, often with hilarious results. Once, while the party was being attacked by some sort of flying machines over the swamps near the temple, a player whinged a bit that, since he had been paralyzed, he had nothing to do while everyone else got to fight the machines, and how unfair that was. Dave regarded him quietly for a moment, then handed him a D6, and said, "Here, roll that every round." The player, confused, asked, "Why?" "That," Dave said, "is how much damage you take every round. That should keep you busy. I don't believe that anyone else complained about anything for the rest of the session." It didn't take long in one of Dave's games for the players to realize that we were on our own, completely. There would be no hints, subtle or otherwise, no clues dropped in our paths when we happened to go off track. No mercy when we stumbled into overwhelming odds. No poison types fudged while we failed our saving throws. It was up to us to search, scout, research, prepare, plot, and react with some sort of competence. If not, characters died, or we as players could simply be informed that we had completely failed our mission and that the session was over. Better luck next time. Victory or defeat was our responsibility, never, respectively, a handout or a punishment. It was never ref versus players, nor was it ref working for players. Dave was there to bring the world alive for us to explore and to make sure we were engaged, entertained, and most importantly, challenged. He did this magnificently, and when we won, we were actually proud of ourselves. So I thought that was a great explanation of kind of the role of the GM in whatever game and how that works best. So that's it for this week. We'll be back next week.
Later, mortals.
Bye.